Myron, what's the bigger flex here? Not needing a ladder to cut down the nets after making the Final Four, or making two-time MVP Nikola Jokic late for a press conference?
Well, I was there with Zach Edey at 7'4" and said, you can save the ladder for somebody else and cut down the net. I mean, that was pretty cool.
A big ladder.
I was about to say, unless you're Zach Edey.
Oh,
who needs a ladder?
First time I've seen that.
I've never seen anybody do that.
But for DJ Burns at NC State to get Jokic, an NBA superstar, to stop what he was doing and be late for a press conference because he was so enamored by everything he was doing, I think that is probably the bigger flex between the two.
I think he's so skilled, especially lefty. I love to be lefty. And like, it seems like teammates like to play with him, so got to be a good guy.
And then there's Zach Edey, seemingly really having fun with this tournament run. The moment in the postgame where he called out Tennessee coach Rick Barnes, who he'd just beaten, for not recruiting him.
Rick Barnes is a great coach, but he was in a bunch of our practice, looked over me. Like, it's kind of been the story of my life. People have doubted me. People look past me and can't do that anymore.
Yeah, it was like a Vibe Award speech or something, man. I mean, he was up there really enjoying the moment, letting everybody know who had ever overlooked him that look at where he is now. So, I mean, he's earned this, and I can see why he's looking back and going, how you like me now?
We've also got two schools, UConn and NC State, whose men's and women's teams are both in the Final Four. But Myron, where's your head at as we head into this Final Four weekend? What are you particularly finding compelling?
I just find it compelling that we have so many unique storylines. I mean, on the men's side, you got DJ Burns, who my guess is in Phoenix will have the most popular press conference of anybody there. Like, who would have thought that 3 weeks ago? Zach Edey, a 7'4", 290-pound human who's trying to will his team to a championship after losing in the first round a year ago. You got UConn, which has kind of become the villain. You know, they're so good. And I think they were more likable last year, but now people are sort of waiting for them to lose because they've had so much success. And then you have Alabama, not football, basketball, has somehow made its way to this stage. So there are so many compelling storylines on the men's side. Obviously, the women's side has been incredible, too. I'm just looking forward to watching all of it unfold.
We spent much of the men's college basketball season lamenting the lack of buzz and star power. But few sporting events are as good at building stars and storylines as the NCAA tournament. And despite fewer upsets and no true buzzer beaters, the 2024 edition has still delivered. So today, our Myron Metcalf shares everything you need to know about Saturday's Final Four slate and his take on who's likely on the verge of a history-making moment. I'm Israel Gutierrez, in for Clinton Yates. It's Friday, April 5th. This is ESPN Daily.
Shopping for Mother's Day is usually a challenge because you people wait until the last minute. But Macy's Gift Finder makes it incredibly fast and easy to find the right gift just in time for Mother's Day. Whether you're shopping for your sister's first one or for your fashionista mom who likes to make a statement, Macy's Gift Finder has so many great gift ideas that you can easily pick out something special to celebrate with them both. You can shop by price anywhere from $25 and under to, say, $100 and below. You can also sort by category like fragrance, handbags, and more. Or gift lists, like for the mom who has everything, or even pre-wrapped gifts for grandma. Find top brands like Studio Pro model Beats headphones, Polaroid cameras, and Samsung smart TVs. So, what are you waiting for? Mother's Day is May 12th, and it'll be here before you know it. Macy's has the perfect gift guide to make picking something for mom easy this year. Head to Macy's.com/giftfinder today. That's Macy's.com/giftfinder.
Myron, when we look at what UConn has done to get here, the one phrase, the one portion of a game that stands out is 30-0. That's the scoring run that they went on during their previous game against third-seeded, not a high seed, third-seeded Illinois. And it's kind of hard to fathom how that's even possible. How was it possible? What happened there?
Well, I was kind of waiting for somebody to like run onto the court and throw in the towel. Like, at some point, we got to have a rule where you just stop the game right there if somebody pulls off a 30-0 run. And I think a lot of people will look at what they did offensively. The three-pointers, Alex Caravan. Cam Spencer with the putback. Rebound inside, Spencer! Samson Johnson with the dunk.
Rogers is out, Luke Goody has come in. Samson Johnson will get it right here! And a sweet deed from Tristan Newton.
Donovan Klingon with the dunk.
Newton, Klingon thrashing his way inside.
I mean, everybody got in. It was almost like a Wu-Tang Clan album, and there are 15 people on one record. Like, that's how it felt, this 30-0 run. But for me personally, I was looking at what they did defensively. Like, yes, 30-0 is wild, but to stop an Illinois team that for a long stretch was the best offensive team in America from scoring during that stretch,
yeah,
that's the scarier element to me of what UConn did.
It's in the corner. Gibbs Wahlhorn will take it. That's another block shot. Clingon's got tennis. It's been 50 minutes in real time since Illinois has scored.
I think we're looking at potentially one of the great teams we've watched in recent college basketball history if they can pull this off.
Yeah, and you can't just look at that 30-0 run, right? Because they've been dominant all tournament long. And what's interesting to me, and of course I have to bring this up as a University of Florida graduate, they are the last basketball team on the men's side to go back-to-back in the mid-2000s, but they had the same starting five from one year to the next. This UConn team, and I'm laughing because I remember reading stories just a couple of weeks after the tournament saying, wow, UConn has a real rebuild on its hands because there are seven players either going to the portal or declaring for the NBA draft. So how have they done this with this much turnover, and how do they compare to some of those great teams like my Florida Gators?
Yeah, this is like when Destiny's Child added some new members, but you still have Beyonce, right? And I think Donovan Klingon is kind of their Beyonce in a lot of ways. He's the big man that is the center of everything. Tristan Newton has been incredible. He was more of a reserve, kind of helping out last year's team, wasn't the star of the show. Alex Caravan, Cam Spencer, so many other pieces. I think it starts with Dan Hurley, who hasn't changed his philosophy. Like, the greatest thing that Dan Hurley has done is he somehow convinced this UConn team that everybody's against him. And actually, everybody was for UConn until they kind of took on that attitude. But I think Dan Hurley needed them to kind of invent an edge. So I think that's a big part of where they're at. I think that's maybe the beauty of this UConn team and what Dan Hurley has been able to pull off, because I really think it can be different guys. That's what's so unique about this UConn team. One guy's struggling, there are five or six other guys who can come in and help. And I don't think there's another team in America that has that kind of depth. But in terms of just dominance, I do think they're at that level of that Florida team. And I think for me, in terms of the teams I've covered, certainly one of the most dominant runs that I've ever seen. If they continue to play that way in Phoenix, they'll be among the great championship teams we've seen over the last 25 years.
So UConn in the national semifinal will be facing Alabama, a four seed. A four seed that seemed like it was better suited to make a deep tournament run last year when they were a one seed and they had the eventual number two pick in the NBA draft, Brandon Miller. Instead, they lost in the Sweet 16. Miller goes to the NBA. This season, they get a four seed. Myron, I don't know if you have one of those teams in your bracket that you immediately say there's no way that team's going to go far because they're in poor form. But for me, Alabama was that team, because if I take you back to the last six games of their season before the NCAA tournament, they gave up 117 points to Kentucky. They lost to Tennessee, twice gave up 100 points to the Gators and lost, including in their first game in the SEC tournament. So how in the world has Nate Oates turned that ending of the regular season around into this Final Four run?
Well, I'll just tell you, I was crazy enough to put them in the Final Four of my original bracket.
Wow. That's a good flex there, by the way, Myron.
Well, I thought they could be overwhelming offensively. And you mentioned the Kentucky game. And this is the interesting thing. The Kentucky game, I think, made a lot of people go, there's no way that this team can win a couple games in the NCAA tournament. The defense is so bad. But go back to that game. They give up 117 points. They also scored 95. Alabama this season, when they have scored at least 89 points, they're 19-1. So Kentucky's the only team that stopped Alabama when that offense was playing to its capacity. So I thought, you know what? Yeah, they're going to give up a lot. But if the defense gets slightly better, they got a chance. And that's what's happened. They've gone from one of the worst defensive teams in America to an average defensive team. And that jump combined with their offensive talent has allowed them to do the same thing they've been doing all year. They're just not giving up as many points.
Yeah, they seem to sort of get right against College of Charleston and Grand Canyon in the first two rounds, had the big upset of North Carolina by 2 points, and then sort of got lucky and had to face a sixth seed in Clemson. And again, didn't seem to have a great defensive performance, but did enough to win. So I'm curious, they've got their point guard, Mark Sears. He was the West Region MVP. He's kind of been leading the charge for the Crimson Tide during this tournament. What's so special about him, and how can he make life difficult for UConn?
Well, he is the engine of that Alabama offense. I mean, you talk about good three-point shooters. He is a great three-point shooter. He's made 43% of his three-point attempts this season. So anytime you have a guard like that, a guy who's a point guard but can also change everything you're doing defensively because he's such an outside threat, that really makes it hard to defend. He has so many weapons, Mark Sears does, to get to, and guys are really interesting matchup threats because of their size and length. But he himself at any moment can just change gears and decide, I'm going to go and get a bucket. It just really puts a lot of pressure on defenses to react to Alabama rather than dictating the pace themselves. And once that track meet starts, it's too late to catch them, and it's just hard to slow them down.
And so would it be UConn's best chance at dominating this game to keep it at a half-court game, or can Alabama dictate the tempo and UConn still win?
I mean, it kind of feels like you'd have to get the Chicago Bulls or something to beat UConn at this point. You know, whatever you do doesn't seem to matter against them. I think UConn has to dictate the pace, has to really do a lot to not allow Mark Sears to be the engine that he has been. And they got to run the floor, and they've been so good at that. Just UConn is a different monster entirely, but Alabama, because they can put up 100 points like nothing, that is going to be the key. Can we get UConn in the track meet and win that way? UConn is going to make sure, or try to make sure, that that's not happening.
Coming up, why this year's Cinderella may have the size it needs to be a giant killer.
The NFL schedule drops this week, kiddos, and you can be there to catch all the action live and in person with Vivid Seats. Experience every touchdown, every tackle, and every eye-popping play of your favorite team. And to kick it off, Vivid Seats, the official ticketing partner of ESPN, is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Download the app or visit vividseats.com today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Let's turn to this tournament's fairy tale team, the NC State Wolfpack. They're an 11th seed. They matched the record for the lowest seeded team ever to make the Final Four. But Myron, I noticed that when you reseeded the field for ESPN.com, you ranked them, NC State, higher than fourth seeded Alabama. So what are you seeing in them now that you weren't seeing, let's say, a month ago?
I'm seeing something that the numbers don't dictate. I mean, because if you go and look at them, there's nothing they're doing at such a high level that makes you go, wow. So it's just hard to see what's happening other than they're just willing themselves to victory. So I ranked them where I did based on the quality of this run. They have defeated Duke twice during this stretch. They beat North Carolina, Texas Tech, another tournament team, a contender at one point this season in the Big 12. And then they destroyed Marquette as well, another really good team. So they are just finding a way, almost like a boxer. I'm a big boxing fan. Like, you know, it's even on the scorecards in the ninth round, and then they just finish strong and get the decision. Like, that's how they're playing. DJ Burns obviously has been a tough matchup, and I wouldn't be surprised if anything happens with them in Phoenix.
Yeah, they've been in one-and-done mode since their conference tournament, and there was a bit of a standing eight count there before he hit that wild three to extend their season. I'm curious, Myron, what would you say was NC State's lowest point of the season? What are they coming back from?
They're coming back from being an afterthought. I mean, I think the lowest point had to be the end of the year when they go, you know, 15-7 is where they started, and then they're 17-14 coming into the ACC tournament. That's a team that won two games, lost seven. So out of nine games, 2-7, Kevin Keats' job is suddenly on the line. Those weren't rumors. That was reality. So you had a head coach who might get fired. You had a team full of guys who are going, what are we doing? In the transfer portal era, that's one of those situations where you go, everything might be different a year from now at this point.
Right.
So I think that was the point of hopelessness for that team when they went 2-7 and just had no chance to get into the tournament unless they won the ACC tournament, which they did. And who else did something like that? A team that also wore the NC State jersey 41 years ago, faced similar adversity in the middle of the season, found a way to get into the tournament, and made the most of it as well.
Team of destiny, the Cardiac Kids, North Carolina State has captured their second NCAA championship to go with 1974's title. 54-52.
Yeah, it seems to be kind of their thing. They should trademark it. But I'm curious, though, because when you watch them play, it seems like they have a good winning formula. You've got DJ Burns, you've got outside shooting, you've got good half-court play. You can maybe run a little bit. What happened there? What unlocked them to figure out, hey, we're doing things right. We just need to tweak this in the slightest and we can make a run. Was there something? Did they just get hot shooting? How did they sort of unlock this run?
Well, one of the best things they've been able to do, I think, is they've been a team that has not turned the ball over a ton. And I think that has really helped them. They're not incredible offensively. They're not incredible defensively. But for the most part, outside of that Marquette game, they're not turning the ball over that often. And when you have a team that isn't necessarily great in one particular area, what you expect is, okay, they're going to make a bunch of mistakes and give the opposing team a number of opportunities. That hasn't happened with NC State. They had five turnovers against Duke in the Elite Eight. They were 3-for-13 from the three-point line, right? Teams that usually shoot that way aren't advancing to the Final Four. But I think NC State has just not given their opponents a lot of opportunities to get extra opportunities off turnovers. And then I think DJ Burns is a unique kind of matchup. It's like no one you've ever seen, because there's only one of him, and the passing touch, the strength, the mobility, all those things have kind of mesmerized teams, and they don't really have an answer for him. So I think you put all that together with Kevin Keats' coaching, you got to give him credit, and that's why NC State is where they are now.
Okay, well, let's dig a little deeper on DJ Burns here, because, and I'm not wanting to discuss his NBA prospects, let's stay in the here and now, but when you talk about a comparison, well, we'll talk about the college version of this player. I think of Zach Randolph. It's 6'9". It's a lefty post player, doesn't really get off the floor that well, but is really quick and agile. And Again, regardless of what his NBA prospects are, in college, you can win with that. Is that a fair comparison?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of Zach Randolph, but let's be honest, DJ Burns at this stage is a better passer than he was. I mean, I think DJ Burns has just become an elite passer in college basketball.
Toss it in, Burns. One-on-one with Stewart, give it up. Oh, high off the window. The cut, the setup, the find.
And I think that's the thing he has on a lot of guys who maybe look the part. I mean, there's a lot of Jokic elements to that.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Jokic was enamored by him, but he just seems really comfortable out there. And Kevin Keats is letting him play. I think that's the biggest thing here is giving the big man the ability to do the things that he's capable of doing. And there just aren't many matchups in college basketball at this level where teams know how to handle that.
Well, you're touching on something that is a bit of a touchy subject in the NBA because people who are college basketball fans look at DJ Burns and say, why is there not a place for this type of player in the NBA? He seems like so much fun to watch. Can you sort of characterize what it's like watching him play?
It's like watching a guy who is having more fun on the court than anybody else.
Burns, like it's rock.
I just see a guy who doesn't care what anybody thinks, who's the leader of his team. Guys love playing with him, and he's just out there having fun. I've never seen a player in my career seem like he's out there feeling less pressure than DJ Burns is right now. Like, he is the most carefree athlete I've ever covered.
No, your move that you were scoring on left and right that game, does it have a name? Your little, like, back to the basket mini style?
What they give me. That's not what I'm looking to do. I'm looking to do something that's wherever they're not, that's where I'm trying to be.
And I think that is what you're seeing out there for him. He doesn't care about the stakes or the next stage or any of that stuff. He's just trying to have fun with his buddies, and that's the most beautiful story in the NCAA tournament.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, him having fun, because there's some reports that maybe he's attracting the interest of NFL teams who want to make him an offensive lineman, perhaps. Here's the thing for me, Myron. First of all, let his career play out in basketball. See what happens first. Secondly, I don't think there are very many NFL teams wanting to protect their multi-million dollar quarterback with somebody who hasn't played football since middle school. So let's keep DJ Burns in basketball for now. But let me ask you this, because this semifinal is definitely, let's call it the meatier of the two, because he will be going up against Zach Edey of Purdue. Now, he is National Player of the Year candidate, Zach Edey, a guy who many thought would have dominated the tournament last year, is dominating it this year. How do you see this matchup? And is it, I guess, fair of Zach Edey to be able to face DJ Burns here, such a big dude that he has probably never faced before in his career?
Well, first off, big men unite. I mean, what a moment for the big basketball players throughout the history of the game, because DJ Burns versus Zach Edey, like, it doesn't get better than that. But I think Zach Edey, and the interesting thing about him is when you see him stand next to DJ Burns, DJ Burns will look small. Like, I don't know if people understand.
Yeah.
On TV is one thing. When you stand next to Zach Edey, it's like a walking redwood tree. He is gigantic, and his legs are just immovable. And the challenge with Zach Edey is there are a lot of big guys around America, including DJ Burns, who just kind of overpower everybody in front of him. No one can overpower Zach Edey at 7'4", 290 pounds, and that's not even his greatest asset, in my opinion. He played 39 minutes against Tennessee. A 7'4", 290-pound athlete, National Player of the Year, who can play an entire game, good luck with that. So I think fatigue, not just because DJ Burns is a big guy, but anybody trying to deal with Zach Edey, they never make it to the end of the game. Either foul trouble or fatigue ends up getting the best of them.
Well, I want to use one of Rick Pitino's favorite phrases, lateral quickness, which he used to call out his team earlier this year. Doesn't seem that that is a specialty of Zach Edey's. Will that come into play here as a problem against DJ Burns, or is this very much classic big man duel?
Well, I think, you know, people may not realize Zach Edey lost, you know, 10, 15 pounds over the summer so that he could be a better defender. He is a better defender this year. He does have more mobility and agility this season. He really worked hard on that. So I think you're seeing Zach Edey have the ability to play in space in ways that he couldn't. Perfect example, Dalton Connect, Tennessee, is coming down the floor, trying to score. Zach Edey blocks his shot.
Connect, trying to get to the basket again. Edey blocks him. Gillis has it to Smith. Now you get a foul. You got a foul.
One of the most important moments of that entire game. I don't think Zach Edey a year ago makes that play. So I think he's quicker than people might think. But certainly, the thing that you're going to try to do if you're NC State is not go into the paint and see if you can overpower Zach Edey. That's difficult. But because of DJ Burns' passing ability, can you lure Zach Edey out to the perimeter and dare everybody else to try to recover defensively? So that's going to be the most interesting point. Zach Edey has never seen a passer at that size like DJ Burns. How does he handle that element? So I'm just looking forward to seeing these two battle each other in what will be one of the most exciting games I think we've seen in a long time.
Purdue was tested in the previous round against Tennessee. That was a one-point game with under 4 minutes to play. Dalton Connect gave the Boilermakers fits. Is there anything that NC State can take from that Tennessee performance and say, hey, we can do that, and we can knock out this team?
You need playmakers. I mean, somebody will have to step up. I mean, DJ Burns is going to have a big game, a really big game. DJ Horn, like, they're going to need somebody, probably two or three guys, to play at a level that maybe they haven't reached all season. From the moment that game starts, you got to be able to match them, and it's going to come down to who's going to be the star that rivals their star in Zach Edey. I'm looking forward to seeing what DJ Burns has for that game.
Okay, Myron, I want to end here, and I don't want to ask you a leading question while I ask you for these predictions, but let me just give some information here. In 2018, the number one seed Virginia was knocked out of the NCAA tournament in the first round by a 16 seed, and then they followed the next season to win the championship. Purdue last season became the second one seed to lose in the first round. And again, not leading the question here, UConn obviously the defending champs with so much going in their favor. How do you see these two semifinals shaking out, and why will it be UConn versus Purdue in the final?
Yeah, I mean, I think UConn and Purdue have been the best teams in America for a long time, and I think you will see that this weekend. I just think UConn has too many weapons for Alabama to handle, and I think Purdue with Edey and what he's able to do will overwhelm NC State. And then you get to the championship game. Yes, Virginia was able to pull it off after losing in the first round, and then they win the championship a year later. The difference with this season is Purdue would have to go through UConn. So it's like, yeah, you got to the end of the game, but Mike Tyson is waiting for you, right? And that's the challenge, I think, if you're Purdue. How do you beat one of the greatest teams we've ever seen? If anyone can do it, it's a team that shoots the ball the way that they do. It's a team with a guy with like Zach Edey. But it's just hard to bet against a UConn team that has just toyed with anybody in their path for a long time. And I don't see that changing this weekend.
And it's fine. The Florida Gators can say for 17 seasons, they were the only team to win back-to-back if UConn goes ahead and does it again this year. Myron, thanks so much for all your insight, and have fun in the Final Four.
Thanks a lot.
The men's Final Four gets going Saturday at 6:09 p.m. Eastern time with NC State against Purdue, followed by Alabama versus UConn. I'm Israel Gutierrez. This has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by
Bruce Baldwin,
Ashley Brown,
Bradford Craig,
Alexander Hyacinth,
Ryan Nantel,
Mike Philbrick,
and Phoebe Untermann.
And happy birthday to you, Phoebe. Special thanks to Andrew Hahn and Jackson Agella. Clinton Yates will be back on Monday. He'll talk to you then.